Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, I only have one play to report on this week. It won me over, but it was a long one. Now, not as long as The 7-Hour Inheritance, of course, or some of Eugene O'Neill's great ones, which tended to run up to 4 hours. But let's face it, we've gotten very used to hearing those four magic words when we enter a theater. 90 minutes, no intermission. Now, why is that exactly? Well, because attention spans have shrunk, of course. Why email when we can text? Why cook when we can order in and all that? Now, I confess I can be frightened when I hear 2 hours and 50 minutes with two intermissions, but then I'm also proud of myself and clearly impressed by the work when I don't check my watch or consider leaving early. Now, all this is an equally long introduction to Greater Clemens, which is currently playing at the Mitzi Newhouse stage inside Lincoln Center. Now, this play is written by one of the most buzzed about playwrights these days. Samuel D. Hunter wrote The Whale, which I did not see, but the one I did see last season was rather unforgettable and so long they actually served you dinner in between. It was called Lewiston Clarkson and was produced at the always challenging Rattlestick Theater downtown. It was actually a pair of one acts, though connected in theme. While there is humor in Hunter's work, there is also a lot of sorrow and humanity. Greater Clemens is a 7-character piece about a small town in Idaho, where the playwright is from, on the brink of extinction, essentially being purchased by a California corporation which looks at heartland and sees condos and resorts. All this is being deeply felt by a 65-year-old woman named Maggie, who has made her living operating a tour of the town's mine, the oldest one in Idaho, as well as a mini museum to go with it and a gift shop. The mine, in fact, was real. It closed in 2005 and was a scene of a terrible fire that killed 81 workers. But primarily this play is about a mother and her son. Joe is a young man of 27 who apparently has a mind of a 15-year-old. He clearly has mental issues and a questionable past. "I'm so tired of being weird, Mom," he says. As her neighbor friend reminds her, Maggie has spent her whole life taking care of needy men, and never has this been more true than with Joe. Now, this leads to conflict here when a former high school boyfriend shows up and wants her to move away with him. But as in other works by this playwright, there is little escape for those we might consider small people in a small town. The production's main advantage is its leading lady, the much beloved Judith Ivey. This is a difficult and challenging and I assume exhausting role to play 8 times a week. Edmund Donovan, as her troubled, intense, and jittery son, is also terrific. There are some politics in Greater Clemens, the local variety as the townspeople are voting on incorporation, as well as the fallout of the country's shameful treatment of Japanese Americans during World War II. Greater Clemens is not necessarily an easy watch, and the ending is complicated, a bit frightening, and not completely satisfying. But it stays with you. Smartly, this one is at Lincoln Center, whose loyal subscribers are accustomed to darker, more difficult material. This one is up for at least another month, and it's doing well. Now, I said last week that I was going to try to explore a few questions that curious theater goers may be asking. For example, with the latest revival of West Side Story, which is now in previews on Broadway, not to mention a movie remake is also in process, why or how both have chosen to do away with Jerome Robbins' iconic choreography? Well, can this be done, first of all? Well, yes, apparently it can. Let's not forget that the recent Oklahoma replaced Agnes DeMille's famous ballet with an angry, contemporary, politically charged modern dance piece. Though nothing else in that reimagined in style anyway show could be changed, the dance decisions could and can. In the case of West Side Story, the current Broadway choreographer, Ann Teresa D. Kiersmaker, says this production is being placed right now, right here, so a new and relatable to young people, I assume she means, kind of dance was necessary. The movie's dance master, by the way, is Justin Peck, the young and adventurous star of New York City Ballet. So I have to believe that, too, will feel more modern and less balletic in nature. I think it's fair to say the songs cannot be switched out, per se, though they can be erased. So be warned. Yet another question some, including myself, have asked is, how do they get all those young men to suddenly walk down the aisle at the end of the first part of The Inheritance? Now, I'm not spoiling anything here, by the way, because I'm not telling you why they appear or where they end up. Anyway, it turns out there is something called a supernumerary in theater. Now, these are not extras per se, but amateur aspiring, I assume, performers who are paid something like $100 to show up every night for just a few minutes. In the show I reviewed last week called The Thin Place, a member of the audience turns out to be more than an innocent stranger. It may be a different person every performance. Yes, I guess he or she would be a supernumerary. Well, who knew? Finally, many wonder why a lot of critics and reporters are giving their 10 best lists at year's end. Well, because they wonder because the theater season is not like any other, is not like any other season. It generally begins in the fall and ends in the spring, also known as Tony's time. So it simultaneously feels too late and too early to make such a list. But I will note a few winners within that world over the year, beginning with playwright Jackie Sibley's Drury, whose Fairview won the much-coveted Pulitzer for drama. Likewise, the theater that premiered it in New York, Soho Rep, moved up on the must-visit off-Broadway list. Another African-American playwright, Jeremy O. Harris, clearly is a new name who had and will have continued impact. His Slave play is nothing if not provocative, and there are more to come. Neither black nor new writer Aaron Sorkin has had a year to remember. His To Kill a Mockingbird has apparently just become the most profitable American play ever. Now, we know he faced a lot of controversy presenting a new take on an old tale, but, well, no one could deny that that worked. The cast recently changed, a slow dissolve from Jeff Daniels to Ed Harris, but no one blinked. As for one who goes back and forth between on and off stage, I think the winner has to be Tracy Letts. He starred in a production of All My Sons, wrote a Broadway show called Linda Vista, has another opening in a few months, and seems to be in every Oscar season movie, including Ford versus Ferrari and Little Women. And then there is another man of film and theater worth noting, Hugh Jackman. Yes, I know his take on Harold Hill and The Music Man doesn't open until next fall, but it's already selling tickets big time. And I guess you can't talk theater these days without mentioning Lin-Manuel Miranda. Why? Well, as Steve Martin once said to Steven Spielberg, because it can't hurt. No, seriously, Miranda has become a real force. Hamilton continues to sell out every show around the country as well. His improv production, Freestyle Love Supreme, has done well. And he seems to be a producer in all media, Fosse Verdon on television, upcoming movies, including Tick, Tick, Boom, In the Heights, and yes, West Side Story. My God, the man even single-handedly led the campaign to save a dramatist bookstore. Oh, I'm sure there are many other winners to recall, Jill, but while the year may be old, the season is young.
And I bet you're getting all ramped up for the official new year.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm already, yes, I am. Well, very few in January, just because it's considered the dregs for theater. That's when you look for closings. I don't know what else is going to close. West Side Story would be the next big opening, I believe, on Broadway.
What struck me this and this is from a few weeks ago, and this is not New Year so much, but that the Michael Jackson show is opening in August.
Yes,
and I can only remember that. I think the things that I remember opening in August was one of them was Miss Saigon.
Yeah,
one of the did Hamilton open in August?
It did open on Broadway, and at that time, and of course it had an incredible run at the Public Theater.
Right.
So a lot of buzz, and it just didn't want to wait. I mean, Miranda was told, you're better off if you wait till, you know, September, because then they start thinking.
People are back in town, right.
He felt pretty confident that Hamilton was going to
I thought that was a safe one.
Yeah, exactly. So, yes, of course, theoretically, you can open in the summer. But, you know, just because of tourists coming in and out, it just doesn't feel. Theater opening, we really do traditionally think of September, October. That's when Music Man is coming then. And it looks like a lot of big stuff is coming.
And it gets in before the Music Man, which might be. These things don't happen in a vacuum, which most people don't realize. Right. So you look at what's there, and you look at what is, you know, how you are going to hopefully get sufficient attention. I can't help but I simply cannot help but reiterate. You know, this is not just well, we tried, and so much time goes into putting up a show and putting it on that it's
absolutely
just inefficient and unfair to dismiss it with, well, I didn't like it, so, you know.
Absolutely.
So, what's next?
I probably should have mentioned Hadestown as well. It did win the Tony, so it doesn't need me to say it's a winner, but it since winning that Tony, it's been a pretty much a sellout. All year long, and, you know, starting a national tour soon. So that was certainly, I would say, the big musical. It was not a great year for original musicals, but Hadestown clearly was and remains. And, you know, overall, if you had to say, you know, I never like to use an entire class of people, but the black playwright, the African-American voice, let's put it that way, really dominated this year. I mean, I didn't even mention ones that were in small theaters and beyond, and even the As You Like It, the Shakespeare in the Park, which was done all African American, was apparently one of the best ones ever, and they're talking and moving that. I mean, you know, if there was a voice that came through, a very angry voice at times, very provocative, very guilt-inducing, I might say. Fairview certainly ends up putting that light right on the audience. Tony Stone. I mean, I've talked about this here before, but that voice, it was strong, it was loud, and it's here to stay.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.